I like to say there's days where you get nothing done and there's days where you get 4 days of work done in one day. And so I just don't think I'm fairly unemployable when it comes. I don't think I could be a good employee at all. People don't fail at real estate because they suck. They fail because there's too many ways to succeed. That's why I suggest you focus on the most important skill in all of real estate, which is finding deals. I'm Colbert Johnson, and in this podcast, I share the exact steps I've used to source 400 deals by age 24. This will allow you to do 3 things: control your deal flow, make unlimited income, and build your empire as an off-market operator.
I'm Brooks O'Hearn, joined by my co-host, Kaiten Murphy, and today we've got a very special guest, Colbert Johnson. Cole, I'm glad to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is fun. Awesome. Now, Cole, you and I connected over Twitter, and got to say, I'm super impressed. For those of you guys listening, Cole is a remarkable investor, and just the things that the way that you're already teaching and sharing your story on Twitter really struck me. And then you and I have had some conversations, a few of my favorite things, a little internet battles with some other people in the real estate world and some controversial threads. So that's the way to go. But Cole, tell us and the listeners a little bit about yourself before we get started.
Absolutely. So yeah, I've been in, I'm only 24, turning 25 in May, but I've been in this space for almost 7 years. So, it hasn't necessarily been an overnight thing at all. So I dropped out of college, when I was 18, I did Running Start in high school, which for those that are listening and aren't familiar with Running Start, it's a program at some high schools in some states that allows you your junior and senior year to take all your classes at a college or community college. You get all your prereqs done and you graduate with 2 years of college done. And I was also a big basketball player. So I had a spot on a team down in LA. And so I went down for really the first half of my first year. And I remember sitting in accounting class and I was like, this is just not what I want to be doing with my life. It doesn't make any sense to me. And, you know, always growing up through high school, middle school, I never could, you know, wrap my brain around working for someone else. So I always had that itch to, you know, I've never had a job. Anytime I needed to make money growing up in high school, I was, you know, working in my parents' business, or I was, you know, teaching basketball, I was training kids on the side. So I could never wrap my head around that. So kind of fast forward, I leave college, I drive home on a Tuesday afternoon, I left class, packed my stuff in my car and drove home. I had to get my broker's license the summer prior, because my brother was a broker, my mom had been a broker, my great grandma had been a broker, my grandma had been a broker. So my family was a lot of real estate brokers. None of them had done anything with flipping off market, anything of that nature, but a lot of them were brokers. So I had basic understanding of, hey, that could be a decent way to make money. What I didn't know is, you know, at 18 years old, it's not the easiest thing to do to, you know, convince someone in Bellevue, Washington with their $1.5 million house to sell to you. So that was the harder part. So I got home, I moved brokerages 3 or 4 times. I tried to blame it on the brokerage and kept doing open houses, kept calling expired listings. I was doing buyer showings for people and just hustling, trying to figure out a way to get some traction, you know, still living at home. And then, you know, I'd say probably 6 or 8 months into my kind of broker journey, I hung my license at a brokerage who had a kind of an off market side. They were bringing investors in on Thursday nights to their company and they're previewing auction deals. They're going to hit the auction steps the next day and selling them and taking hard earnest money checks that they could take to the auction steps and bid on deals for them. And they were putting $10,000-$20,000 assignment fees on the deals. And I'm like, what is an assignment fee? What is this? And coincidentally, actually, you know, I'm a big believer of, you know, things kind of just align at the right time for you if you go all in. So the next day I was at Applebee's with a buddy of mine who became my first business partner, you know, we're having the 2 for $20 wings and things that you do at Applebee's. And I pulled up my Instagram and I saw this kid on my story posting this $40,000 wholesale check that he just did in Tacoma, Washington. And, you know, he was a younger guy too. And that's why I post a lot of what I do, because it makes it tangible for people. And, you know, they were more on the flashy side. Here's my car, here's my shoes, here's my private jet flight. And I don't do a ton of that, but it still made it tangible for me and go, okay, you know, this is something that I actually can do. You know, so from that time on, the next day, you know, my business partner at the time, Paul, my first business partner, he was a football player at UW, a running back. So he quit the team and left school. And I sat in my parents' upstairs room, pretty much an attic. And, you know, we were cold calling a random list we got from a title company, just trying to get our first deal. And so that was kind of the beginning of the origin story, right? That led to, you know, after 3 to 6 months of cold calling, we got our first deal from an agent. That first deal ended up being $105,000. And, so I can go into the specifics of that, but in terms of getting into the business and my intro into real estate and, you know, making my first dollar in real estate, that was my journey.
I love that. I love that. Now, you said that was $105,000 deal. You have, since the beginning, you've only wholesaled, right? Like you, I mean, or primarily wholesaled, or have you gotten into fix and flips or commercial, anything like that? Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So we've done, quite a few fix and flips. We do 5 to 10 a year, easy fix and flip is fix and flip. Sorry about that. Also a lot of wholesaling. That's the thing about me. I don't love real estate. I like building businesses. So like our wholesale company is a beautiful, the real estate's the product. It's what we do. It's what I know, you know, the complexity of everything that comes with real estate, you still have to deal with, but, you know, it's more so a product that we operate in. So the easy stuff will flip, primarily we wholesale. And then, you know, I also do a lot of work with, especially moving 2023 with larger, operators and self-storage, multifamily, commercial, things of that nature as well. So, I'm pretty experienced in all of it. I had a portfolio myself at one time buying a kind of lower price point duplexes that with high cash flow. I hated that. It's just not my thing. My thing is business. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now on the real estate side.
And that's, and we'll definitely get into more of that. That's something that really stuck out to me when you and I first connected was the business side of it, because you've got your wholesaling business that you've scaled, you've got your call center business that you scaled. And I remember seeing like one of the first tweets that you and I ever connected on was you talking about how you built your call center. And, you know, I know Twitter is very limited on characters and things, but you were like, you know, you broke everything down about building your call center and you were like, here's how I did it. Here's how you could do it. Like, it's super simple. Go for it. And I was like, this kid's got a brain that's way different than a lot of people, even people in real estate. So that was one thing that really stuck out to me. And for those of you guys listening, Cole just mentioned all the knowledge that he drops on social media. And like I said, his Twitter feed is full of great investing advice. So for those of you listening that want to connect with Cole, I highly recommend following him on Twitter. He's also on TikTok and YouTube and Instagram for those of you that want some free advice and free investing advice. So check him out there. We'll have the links in the show notes. So Cole, so you're plugging along. You were by the track record there, it sounds like you were about 18 or 19 when you first got your first deal. Yep. And then so you had the business partner, then you started kind of growing. Let's go to, when did you hit that low point that every entrepreneur hits of like, the walls are kind of closing in, the pit, as we call it here on this show?
Yeah. I call it kind of a crucible. I think every human goes through a crucible in their life that kind of shapes, the direction of their life and what they become passionate about and, you know, things of that nature. So for me, we were probably 2.5 years in. So we had scaled quickly. We had an in-office team of 10 or 12 sales guys and a transactions team. We'd grown really quickly. We were doing a couple hundred grand a month and just wholesale fees. And, not super profitable though. I wasn't really an experienced entrepreneur and, you know, started to burn out. I guess I didn't know I was, but, you know, started to kind of lose motivation, started to, everything kind of felt dry. Nothing really, you know, really sparked me anymore. And then I started having like weird vertigo episodes. I don't know if you guys have dealt with vertigo, but vertigo is it's just, you start spinning. The first time it happens to you though, it's like, whoa, what is going on? And then I started having panic attacks, the normal burnout kind of phases to go to panic attacks. I was 19 or 20 at the time. And then from there, I dealt with, I've been a carrier of Lyme disease my whole life. Everyone in my family is, from my mom, because she grew up in New York.
Wow.
That's where it's prevalent. So because my health got so bad, I got so stressed, went downhill, that kind of became active. So I started getting really sick. I would wake up, over a period of 4 weeks, I essentially went from playing basketball 4 hours a day and working 8 hours a day to, you know, sleeping 18 hours a day. I couldn't drive. My vision got so bad because, you know, it's a million different things that Lyme can do to you. So my vision got so bad. My body got so weak. I could barely walk, couldn't lift weights. I was shaky. I was pretty much everything you can think of. It was chaos I'd say I'm 95% recovered from that, but it's taken me years to kind of regain my health. So that was kind of the crucible I went through. And that pretty much shut down the business. Thankfully, I had a good team, so we were still making money. That was the beginning of the end for my first business partner and I. We just weren't aligned on where we wanted to go and how we wanted to build it. So we split. And then my first hire ever, Mike, who was our sales team leader, became my partner. And he's still my partner to this day. We have an incredible partnership across multiple companies. And he's kind of the backbone. He's behind the scenes. He's hiring sales guys, training sales guys, making sure deals are getting locked up and the ship's continuing forward. So, but I was down and out for a year and a half, pretty much, of just not being able to work, not being able to do anything. And that's, people won't know that because I was still building companies, but I was building companies from my bed. I was, on my laptop in my bed and I was still doing stuff, but it looked very different. So that was my first, that was my crucible, that I would say shook me up as an entrepreneur, kind of what I wanted my life to look like, my days to look like, my companies to look like. That was the beginning of kind of a transition to where I'm at now, which I would say is a very good place. I still have those days where, you're working 12, 16 hours, but it's very different than it was before where, I know the signs of, getting to that place and I'm never going to go back there. So yeah, I hope that answers your question. I don't share that a ton, but that's kind of my, which shaped me a lot to become the business owner and person I am right now.
Well, that's pretty significant too. And, seriously. I guess most entrepreneurs are lucky that hopefully it doesn't get to that point, but I think everyone does experience some level of burnout or health distress or something along those lines, because all we, I feel like there's kind of this message, especially for entrepreneurs who are new to the business, where it's like, you just work. And it's like, you don't take breaks. You get to take breaks when you make the money. And it's like, yeah, that's a great message until it's not. And then you're at this level of burnout where it's like, I can't even function. So like I think you went through it worse than most people do, but like you were building businesses from your bed. How did you keep going?
Yeah. I think what did light me up is the business side, right? It's I have no problem with that. I think that what was draining me more than anything was, I had this clock in my head of how many hours I needed to be in the office, how many hours I needed to seem productive. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs get caught up in the trap of like busyness versus being productive. Mm-hmm. Like what's actual moving the needle versus what's just like convincing yourself that you work harder than anyone else, which I don't think is like a badge of honor to wear anymore. I think with technology and the things we have at our disposal, like I think saying you're the guy that works the hardest is kind of a fool's errand, because no one works harder than the coal miner or the guy that's doing kind of a manual labor. Like I had an uncle that was a steel worker. None of us are working harder than them, but with the technology at our disposal, it doesn't make sense to, and it's selfish because the people, as your business grows, hiring people is your duty as an entrepreneur, to provide opportunity. So yeah, I mean, ultimately what kept me going is just my love for business, I think, at the end of the day, and just knowing that I kind of always shaped my life around just knowing that everything's a season. And that it was going to shape me into the person that I needed to become on the other side, especially being so young, going through all of that. It's just, it made me grow up, or like I'm 24 now and I got married in May, and people are like, oh my goodness, you're so young to be married, this and that. And I feel like I'm 45 just because of the life experience I've had. And I have business partners that are 40 in their 40s. And I feel like I'm talking to someone my age when I'm talking to them. So I think overall, long-term in my life, it's going to be a net benefit to me. But in the moment, it was brutal. But just telling myself that just another day and stay focused and spending time on what I enjoy doing, which is building companies, instead of checking the box and working 12 hours a day just to say I'm busy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, congratulations. Excuse me. Congratulations on getting married. And the one question I had for you was going to be, when you talk about burnout, because every entrepreneur hits it, right? And I think this is something that, did you have to go back to, I know you said business was what really like lit your fire. Mm-hmm. Did you ever, go through a phase kind of where you faltered from that and you were like, I'm not really even sure like this is what I want to do. This is where I want to be. And then how did you kind of refocus back into the business side?
Yeah, no, I never really faltered into that, right? I faltered into like, what was I doing that put me in this situation? And if I would have come to the conclusion that it was just business in general, I wouldn't be here. Because getting to that point, you realize like health is more important than anything. I'd rather make 50 grand a year the rest of my life working at a UPS office than have to deal with that health situation again. So I think more my conclusion was how I was doing my days versus like what I was doing. I think that answered that somewhat. So it wasn't like do I want to falter from business? It was, how do I want to structure my day so this never happens again? You know, I think, again, like I talked about from middle school and high school on, like I never could wrap my brain around having a job. And still to this day, when you look at like my predictive index, everyone in our company takes like the personality, like I would be the worst employee on earth. Just the way, just the way I like yep. all entrepreneurs type A, like you're just jumping from thing to thing. You're there's day, like I like to say there's days where you get nothing done and there's days where you get 4 days of work done in one day. And so I just don't think I'm fairly unemployable when it comes. Like, I don't think I could be a good employee at all. So, yeah, it was never like, hey, is this the right thing for me or not? It was more like, you know, how do I do this and sustain a healthy life on top of it? Make sure I'm taking care of my physical health, my relationships, my family, and then I'm keeping my cup full. You know, I think as entrepreneurs, we drain our cup and pour it into our business and we tie our identity so closely to our business. So it was more a gut check for me. Like, my business isn't me. Like, I don't have to be a million. I don't have to make millions of dollars next year. Like, and just really slowing down and making sure I'm living the way I want to live and let business come second to that.